You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, I'm really pleased to turn once again to the topic of education and to bring back actually the Maxim Institute. They are doing an enormous amount of research and policy work. We've had the likes of Marianne Spurtle on before, of course, talking, but I'm wanting to address a new policy paper the Maxim Institute's put out, and it's called Teaching Tomorrow, Redefining Education in the Age of AI. Now, it's been written by Natasha Bolas, but she's not available, so we've gone for someone else. It's Tim Wilson, who's the Executive Director. Tim, welcome to the show.
Yeah, great to be with you, Simon. Nice to be here.
I will admit right from the outside, Tim, I'm feeling less confident than usual. You have a formidable background in broadcasting, and here am I interviewing you, so I'm terribly nervous.
Well, here's what you do, Simon. It's just like you just hold to your position. So if I bounce something back to you, you just say, no, I'm asking the questions. You answer the questions. I did that. I was doing an interview with Leighton Smith, and, you know, a magnitude of what you may be experiencing now, I was experiencing with Leighton, because obviously he's been, he is a broadcasting titan. And we were talking about artificial intelligence. And one of the questions he asked me was, do you think, and this just came totally out of the blue, do you think artificial intelligence is susceptible to demonic possession? And I was like, oh, that's very interesting. What a great question. What do you think? And he said, no. What do you think? I'm asking you the question. So keep your question hat on. It's going to be fine. And by the way, is it susceptible to demonic possession? I think that anything that's associated with human interaction, and AI relies on that, may well be susceptible to demonic possession on reflection. Anyway, glad we got that out of the way.
I know. Look, it's very important that we get into the theological matters really quickly and swiftly. There'll be lots of feedback on that part of the interview already. That is excellent advice. Actually, on the side note too, I noticed you were on Mike Hosking the other day giving a rendition of Rachmaninoff or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. So look, I did try and play the piano. Here's some advice to anyone who wants to play the piano on the radio. Do a bit of practice beforehand. I've done a bit of practice before this interview, so I think it's going to be okay.
Oh, that's good. See, I don't do any practices before interviews, which is probably why they end up the way they do. But we should turn to obviously this excellent policy paper. I know you there at the Institute, at the Maxim Institute, have been doing a series on the whole question of artificial intelligence. And this particular policy paper is looking at its impact on education. So seeing I'm asking the questions, as you are articulately putting, give us a bit of a feel for what this policy paper is about and what some of your insights are.
Yeah, look, education is a crucial topic. I mean, it's an expensive one too. We spend $22 billion a year on education in this country. It's about 5% of our GDP. And we've got all these issues. We've got problems. We don't have enough teachers. We have students not attending. Over 4 years, you know, the attendance rates dropped from 60 to 46%. And also, we've got the widest gap. Now, the issue with education is that those that are doing well continue to do well, but those who are doing poorly, the gap seems to be extending. We've actually got the widest gap of achievement in the English-speaking world. So we've got a lot of issues with education. We see artificial intelligence as a way that, now with constraints around it, as a means to actually really fix some of these issues, to deepen pupil engagement, to be able to actually allow for different kinds of exchanges in the education arena. So, for example, you would know of chatbots. Educationally, chatbots can actually get kids to confide in them in a way that teachers don't, because teachers are sort of more, I guess there's more going on with teachers. They're an authority figure. There's probably previous, you know, the thing that you caught me doing in the playground, I'm not going to confide in you. So I guess our position is, yes, we need some guardrails around it. We can talk about those, but there are some real opportunities here. And the goal, and it'll take a wee while to get there, but the goal is that, you know, we talk about teacher-student ratios, and we say, oh, you know, one teacher to 30 students, probably a bit high. Be nice to get it down to the early 20s. You know, you fork out a lot of money and you might go to a private school, you get it even lower, for example. With artificial intelligence, it's possible to have a teacher-student ratio of 1-to-1, in the sense that you can curate an individualized education experience. And you will see this with kids. Kids are so different, adults are different, so kids are different. So if we're able to create an educational, I suppose, pathway that attends to a kid's strengths and also bolsters their weaknesses on a very, very individualized basis, which is possible through the power of artificial intelligence, then I think that would be an incredible experience both for kids, and it'll help teachers too, but we can get into that.
Well, let's just pick a couple of things out there. I suppose that the base point, to put it somewhat colloquially, is AI is the cat out of the bag now. There's obviously people who are deeply worried about the technology. Putting my cards on the table, it's out of the bag. We have to deal with it and use it the best we can. And I think that's an assumption from your own paper or Natasha's paper from the Institute. But as you were speaking about teachers to students, and just to sort of a challenging question with two parts. The first is, are students really learning if there's AI involved? So you think about the ChatGPTs, the generative art that can be created. Are they genuinely learning? And secondly, will we be replacing teachers? If AI is conceptually as good as it can be, and for teachers listening, including my wife, don't freak out, but will we need teachers?
And that's a great question. The first one, I'll address it first, because we don't see that this will be a reason to start making teachers redundant. Far from it. We want teacher-led artificial intelligence. So please tell your bride that under our framework, she's still got a job. And that's crucial, because it's not as if we want the robots teaching the kids. We want the teachers directing the technology to help the kids. And this is about some of the restrictions around artificial intelligence. It has to be human-centered. It has to be explicable, i.e. we have to understand what's going on, to be overridable. So that means if a teacher's seeing the working, then they can take control. So that we see teachers I think education, I mean, you'll remember this, Simon, probably there's at least one teacher who stands out, whom you made a connection with, who actually lifted you up and in some sense changed your life. And I think many teachers go into it to be that teacher for students. We see education as a relational exchange and interchange. So it's not as if we just want to outsource that stuff to quote unquote the robots, far from it. To your other question about can it actually teach, and I want to go to the other statement you had, which is the cat's already out of the bag. Yeah, the cat is already out of the bag. There's a tool called Writer's Toolbox that's here already in Australia and New Zealand. There was a survey done of about 70 schools in Queensland, and Writer's Toolbox helps kids write. And the writing, the results of that using in the classrooms where that tool was used, the writing improved. It was writing skills doubled compared to the state average. Particularly interesting was year nine boys. And you know, it's a struggle to get boys to write. Sure, they want to run around outside. They want to punch their mate beside them. They want to pick their nose. But to actually get them to write is a real struggle. The year nine boys, the results in this survey found that they achieved 9.6 times the results of average state schools. So that suggests that there's a real opportunity there. And it's, of course, it's got to be measurable. And I think that's the other thing I would say with digitally based technology is it can be measurable. You can get the analytics pretty quickly. And that's another, just to get back to your bride, I'm sure, whom you're constantly thinking of, artificial intelligence can help also with the burdens, the administrative burdens around teaching, like marking, administration. McKinsey did a survey of actually what teachers spend their time doing. They spend just a slim majority of their time administrating, 49% of their time actually teaching. I'm sure Rachel would love to spend more time in front of kids changing their lives than ticking forms and uploading documents.
Oh, look, 100%. I mean, it's been one of my observations through Rachel but other friends that are teachers, exactly that point that you mentioned from McKinley, that ultimately they do enormous amounts of administration rather than their teaching. So in terms of the policy paper, recommendations or suggestions will clearly be around more investment. Yeah. AI just doesn't pop up into schools. And do you have any comment too on teacher training? Because I suspect, and I hope this is not a false analogy, I know recent reports and research have been indicating, say, in mathematics and science, teachers themselves are scared, for want of a better term, and therefore are not so capable.
Yeah, scared
of math. Who isn't? No. But scared of maths, therefore not willing as to impart the knowledge. And maybe that's the same with AI. It still seemed quite scary to a lot of people. So what are some of the policy recommendations both around investment and teacher training?
Well, certainly we have to, because you've touched on something near the scariness of AI. There's a phenomenon called algorithm aversion, which is that teachers and people in general, they'll forgive. So if you stuff up, I'll forgive you, Simon. I'll let you know. Just put that on the table right now. I'll forgive you. But if a machine makes a mistake, say if an AI makes a mistake, there's far less. It's like, oh no, we've got to chuck out this technology. It's garbage. So any institution of AI within the educational experience, and it is, I've got to say, as I say, the cat's out of the bag. It is happening now. I mentioned that tall writer's toolbox here in Australia and New Zealand. We really have to be careful. We have to be very, very, I think, human-centered in how we introduce this technology. In terms of how to pay for it, I don't know. That's not something the paper touches on. But given that we do spend $22 billion a year on an education system that is struggling, that has that huge gap between those who are doing really well and those who are doing poorly, our falling PISA scores, this is on the international writing and maths, numeracy and literacy measures, we're declining in those. So you would think, and this government obviously has focused and has targeted very, very strongly on changes in education, you would think there would be an appetite for this. And we've certainly, amongst those in the policy area who are preoccupied with education, we've had some really positive responses. I think the issue too is we just really have to, and a lot of parents too will be going, oh, you know, my goodness, screen time. This is just more screen time. This is the thing that I fight. This is the battle that I fight every day between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. about screen time. There has to be structure around that. So, you know, there needs to be exposure time limit to age restrictions. There also has to be standards for data storage and security, privacy, etc. So we need to put that sort of frameworks around it. The good news, Simon, is that other countries are already doing it. So Australia's got a framework around artificial intelligence use within education. We could just pinch their homework, so to speak.
We can't have the Australians beating us.
No, we can't. No, we can't. But what we do is we rename it, probably a lot more succinctly. We'll be able to do that and pinch their work. Singapore also and South Korea, they've actually digitized their whole educational platform. So they had, just going into COVID, they had 5.5 million students and 430,000 teachers online simultaneously throughout the pandemic. I'm not saying that we reinvent the wheel here. I think we can take advantage of the fact that other countries are well advanced in this, use some of the thinking we've got that they've got, and adapt it to our local situation.
I thought it was one of the many strengths in the paper, actually. It's one of my little bugbears, not about Maxim or the paper, but New Zealand in general, that we tend to recreate wheels when actually we can look around. We're not often the world leaders, dare I say that. There's a number of places around the world in a variety of areas we can learn from. But I mean, in terms of the need to take this up swiftly, does the paper talk about that? Because AI is here now. A lot of the world, as you mentioned, Singapore, South Korea, Australia are moving ahead at pace. Is New Zealand's education system or structure nimble enough to adopt this quickly? Because AI it's here. It's going to affect even the employment of those in school now. The jobs that perhaps some of us think is standard will be gone with AI.
Absolutely. And look, just on that note, we're going to release a paper on artificial intelligence and work February 2025. And look, just on that note, automation came for blue-collar workers, but AI is coming for white-collar workers. So you're looking at things like airline pilots. There's a whole, and we won't get into it now, but there's lawyers starting out who summarize legal documents and legal decisions. That can happen. You know, ChatGPT, you put those into ChatGPT, they'll do it in 2 minutes. They won't be in the office for 8 hours doing that. So look, the cat is out of the bag, as you wisely observed at the start of this. And I think I know that there is an awareness of this at the policy level, and there is their attention is being paid. Are we nimble enough? We're going to have to be. And I would say also, you know, going back to that tool I mentioned, Writer's Toolbox, individual schools are already doing it. So what we need to be able to do as a, the educational apparatus needs to just get some structures around that, so that when schools are going into it, and you want schools all about localism, when schools are going into it, they won't make the mistakes of a first-time adopter. I think it is crucial. Is there a timeline? The paper doesn't suggest one. What we want to do is, and there's a lot of uncertainty about artificial intelligence, a lot of negativity, and a lot of that's well founded. But we wanted to see where the benefits were, because we're convinced that technology can improve the educational experience, and this technology in particular, we see there's some real opportunities, and we've got some real problems. So you think about it, students, the attendance thing, it's not just low socioeconomic students. Students aren't going to school because they think that they can find a better lesson on YouTube on a subject they're really interested in. And if you ignite a passion in a young person, then you've got their attention and their engagement just guaranteed.
And that's sort of the exciting side of AI, and that's why I think the policy paper's exceptionally good. And look, we've touched on actually, because I was going to ask you around the recommendations, but we've actually talked a lot about those. As I'm reading it, your recommendations to prepare for that uptake of the AI products, keep teachers, as we were saying at the start, at the center of learning. Yes. So I suppose, would it be fair to say, to sort of wrap up, that really your paper is optimistic? Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, we're aware of the risks, and I touched on some of those earlier in terms of security, in terms of screen use, in terms of age restrictions on it. But the other side of it is that if there can be a more intense and productive educational experience, you could say to the boys, okay, great, you've improved your writing by 9.6 times the country average. Go out. Run around the playground, punch your mate, pick your nose. I don't care. It's so there'll be less of that grinding, onerous burden. I think the same burdensome aspect of education, and the same absolutely goes for teachers as well.
Well, Tim, thank you for talking us through the paper again, to acknowledge Natasha Bolas as the author. If people want to obviously access this policy paper, Teaching Tomorrow, or other policy papers of the Institute, how do people find Maxim online?
www.maxim.org.nz. Maxim.org.nz. It's the Institute, not the magazine.
That's a very important distinction. Hey, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Simon. Catch you next time.
So that was Tim Wilson. He's the Executive Director at the Maxim Institute.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.